You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Zhao Ziyang, who served as the premier of the People's Republic of China in the 1980s, was ousted from office after he refused to support the suppression of the pro-democracy demonstrations in Tiananmen Square in 1989. He lived out the rest of his life until his death in 2005 under house arrest. But he told his side of the story on audio tapes that have been secretly smuggled out of China. They've been put into book form as Prisoner of the State, the secret journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang, and they reveal the secret inner workings of the Communist Party and the Chinese government. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased that it brings Bao Pu, one of the book's translators and editors, to our show today. Welcome.
I'm very pleased.
When did these tapes surface?
The first time we know this, tape is in 2005, and shortly after he died, and when the his legacy come into, people are talking about his legacy.
Were they smuggled out of the country after he died?
It took 2.5 years for us to collect these tapes. And it has several copies, and it was on several people's hands, and the trick is nobody had the complete set, so it actually took 2.5 years to gather these tapes.
And that's because it would have been impossible for any one person to smuggle them all out. He was being watched all the time, wasn't he?
Yes, I think. What it started, it was a group of his friends convinced him to do a conversation with them. And in the very beginning, he was, going to someone's house. And they decided, doing recording is the most effective way. And that's how he started. And because he couldn't go to someone's house, that easily. And he decided, to continue himself.
Now, he was under house arrest, but he was allowed to travel a bit.
In a very limited fashion.
I know he liked to play golf. Was he allowed to play golf even when he was under house arrest?
The aim of the authority was to separate him from the rest of, society. So when he do go to play golf, and they made sure there's no one around.
How many hours of tape were there altogether? Do we know?
There are about 36 tapes. So it's about 36 hours.
And how did you become involved with editing and translating? And how did you wind up working with the other two translators and editors, Rene Chung and Addie Ignatius?
It all started with some kind of family business. I think we learned this I learned this from the connection of my father and who worked for him before. Renee is
Premier Zhao as well?
Not in a personal capacity, because I was young when he was in office.
Mm-hmm. So your father knew him, and your father came in possession of these tapes?
No. He facilitated, the negotiation, and we gathered the tape on the basis of consensus, among these people.
And so the three of you translated and then tried to work it out. Was there that much material that you couldn't, that one person couldn't do at all?
The process is we first translated into a Chinese, from a Chinese version to a English version that's identical with the transcript, and then it goes through copy editors and to make it more accessible to general English reader.
Now, what do you think the significance of this journal is beyond the fact that he gets to tell his story?
The most significant part is it serves as a restoration to a version of history gets lost. In the Chinese government maintained version of history, and this man who served as 7 years as China's I mean, premier and 2 years as general secretary does not even exist.
He's just been written out of history.
Right.
And also so many decisions are made in secret. And this book talks about just how the Chinese government works or has or worked while he was in power.
Yes.
Now, how much power did he have at his height? When what does being premier mean and what does general secretary mean? I know what it meant when Mao was premier and general secretary, but he didn't have that kind of power, did he?
Yes, that's true because so-called paramount leader was Deng Xiaoping, and Deng Xiaoping had an ultimate say to a particular issue. But Zhao, as the second highest, he has the most influential position after Deng Xiaoping, and he was able to push through and the reform program.
And wasn't he Deng Xiaoping's man?
Yes and no. They corroborated on economic reform, and Deng's personal inclination is to push to make sure China go through this transformation from a economy to market economy. But they were unable to cooperate on political reform, and which they had different ideas.
Even though both of them had suffered as a result of some of the worst excesses of the Maoist years, they had both been ousted from power and from the party at one point or another in their careers during the Cultural Revolution.
Yes, that shows a similarity of that system, and it's a tradition in that system to resolve differences through cleans out. Leadership have a different opinion.
At different times, you can be thrown out of leadership and then come back in as the winds of politics change.
Right.
My guest is Bao Pu, who with Renee Chang and Adi Ignatius have put together, translated and edited a book called Prisoner of the State, The Secret Journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang. It's published by Simon & Schuster. How did Zhao get his start in politics?
He started as a very successful provincial administrator, and he is known for finding practical solutions to bring up, agriculture production. And this is, a kind of rarity after Cultural Revolution and makes him, sticking out, among the bureaucrats.
Because he was a more of an original thinker. But during the Maoist years, you had to be a good soldier, didn't you? Otherwise, you would get in trouble.
That's why that he is unusual among all the bureaucrats, because, the bureaucrats were trained to think certain way, and he was not.
So was he seen as a kind of a Gorbachev figure in China at this time, somebody who could affect the kind of transition that we were seeing throughout the communist world?
It was perceived by many people, but I think he's not. He is a man to have a very good sense of where where the country should go, and he would find a practical solution to lead, the policy towards, that goal.
Well, at the heart of the story are the Tiananmen Square massacres and the student demonstrations. Just for people who don't remember anymore, was there a specific spark that got them going in April 1989?
Yes, it was triggered, by the death of former General Secretary Hu Yaobang. And the public mourning and shock that actually triggered a large-scale protest.
Now, Hu Yaobang was also seen as a more liberal than most of the leaders?
Yes.
And what was the – why did they protest? Did they think that he had been killed or
The discontent is because Deng Xiaoping viewed Hu as, too liberal. And that so the public mourning was a showing of defiances. And unfortunately, that was against, the paramount leader.
Even though Deng had given up his most of the offices that he had held earlier in his career, hadn't he? I mean, he had been the premier. He had been the general secretary.
Deng was once general secretary in the 50s, and Deng Xiaoping want to have, find a way to break Mao's pattern. So he actually posted, different people to different, offices, while himself as a paramount leader held in, without
the power behind the throne.
Official, yes.
Because instead of just being the official power, he could move things around behind the scenes.
Right.
Who dies in this plane crash? And then there were these demonstrations. What were the demonstrations calling for? And what was the government's response?
It started, as a mourning, a public mourning, and the government somewhat tolerated that mourning process. And once it gets bigger, and one faction of the government favored a harsh response, and because it would open up more political opportunities for them, and the people like Zhao are against it, and they think, the diffuse tensions would open up, maybe a political reform opportunity. It was, in the very beginning, it was, political judgment, and only when the scale of the demonstrations become large, then the moral issues, becomes more prevalent.
People started putting up posters, and they started being critical of the way things were being run, and making suggestions for how China should change.
Right. So in the very beginning was mourning, and quickly, freedom of the press being put on the table, and then, was calling for democracy.
And then an editorial was drafted by party leaders. It ran in the People's Daily. That managed to incite even bigger protests. What did it say?
That protest was actually the first time, spontaneous large protest was against, the paramount leader's will. And that was the first time in the PRC history.
And Zhao thought that that editorial was a big mistake. Was he alone in arguing that?
He was. It was an uphill struggle to begin with, because that actually requires, he has to try to convince Deng Xiaoping to change his mind, and that's a very. I mean, it was a very difficult thing to begin with, and he. He made a very difficult choice, and he never backed down.
He wanted the party to issue another response, but then they wouldn't. I guess because they made the decision that if they followed Zhao's advice, that they were just going to be opening up a Pandora's box and had no idea of just where this whole thing might lead.
At that time, it was solely decided, by Deng Xiaoping, and he had the most influential input in the course of event.
Well, they seem to see the Tiananmen Square protests as an attempt to overthrow the People's Republic and the Communist Party. And Zhao didn't see it that way. What did Zhao did he think that they could keep a communist government in place and still allow for democratic reforms?
Yes, I think he did made that assessment. Even the student leader did not claim that they were trying to overthrow the government, and in fact, that was a protest, a pretext of the government for their military action, and which they gave up, arguing that only 2 years after.
My guest is Bao Pu, who has translated and edited The Secret Journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang, with Renee Chang and Addy Ignatius. There's a foreword to this book, which is called Prisoner of the State by Roderick McFarquhar, and it is published by Simon & Schuster. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. A Later on in the show, a survivor of a 1979 plane crash in Cape Cod describes what happened that night and talks about the emotional fallout in the years that followed. Plus, word maven Patricia T. O'Connor fields your calls about the complexities of the English language. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're back with Bao Pu, who, along with Renee Chang and Addie Ignatius, edited and translated a book that has been published under the title Prisoner of the State, The Secret Journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang. It is from Simon & Schuster. And we were just talking about the Tiananmen Square demonstrations. Now, Zhao had been made prime minister. He was general secretary of the Communist Party. I'm assuming that he was seen for a while as the likely successor to Deng Xiaoping.
Right.
And he and you say that they had a mixed relationship, agreed on certain things, economic reforms, but less on whether they should democratize.
Right. I think what happened is the Tiananmen protests happened at the time of that the economic reform was was having a lot of difficulties, and because of that,
because we go through a transitional period,
right? And because of that, the conservatives who want to roll back economic reform try to use the student protests as their opportunity, and I think that's the confrontation begins.
But the economic reform wasn't rolled back. So was this the deal that was struck, martial law and suppression of the students, but at the same time continue the economic reforms?
Well, the economics reform was put on the shelf, for a couple of years until Deng Xiaoping made his push in 1992.
Zhao reveals in his journal that he regrets his falling out with Deng. How bad did it become?
He made it clear that he does not, the perception that he betrayed Deng Xiaoping was wrong. He never intended to betray him. However, he insists on that, politically they should be parted because, their choices over the response, to the student demonstrators.
Was he able to attend the memorial service when Deng died in 1997?
No, when he was under house arrest, the authority was determined to keep him isolated from the rest of society. So Deng's mourning process was a public event. He couldn't be part of it.
Now, what did he think was going to happen? He must have realized that there would be political ramifications for his actions. He was the lone voice against the most powerful man in China, and there was a whole group of conservatives who were also against him.
He made it clear because he was the general secretary, and he would not be the general secretary to crack down the students. And this is a rare, event for a politician making a moral choices.
But do you think that he overestimated the extent of his power?
I don't think so because, the act was clearly not, for the purpose of retain power. And it was obvious from his position to retain power is to side with the paramount leader, Deng Xiaoping, and he didn't.
So he was really, in effect, sacrificing his political career for a certain moral choice that he had made. Didn't he call Gorbachev and talk to him about this?
He talked to Gorbachev, and Gorbachev in his memoir mentioned him. He was on the liberal side, and I think he explained it. At the time, his idea of a political reform is actually slightly different from what the Soviet Union was undergoing.
Well, both of them wound up losing their offices. In the case of Zhao, he decided to resign before he was demoted and ousted. Was there any public reaction? Was the public even aware that this power struggle was going on in the party?
Unfortunately, there was very little sign that the public were aware of I mean, the process among the leaders. But Zhao as a figure, you know, as a historical figure, I mean, remains, you know, remembered, I mean, among the people. The public reaction to this book, you know, shows, you know, just that.
This book has been published in China?
It is published in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm.
Which is now part of China. So
which is now part of China.
The communist government
retained,
didn't clamp,
you know,
down
part
on
of
this?
The freedom of press.
Zhao went to Tiananmen Square and addressed the demonstrators. This was at the time of a hunger strike. What did he say to them?
He basically tried to persuade the student to leave the square, and because, you know, he knew what was coming, he desperately tried to avoid bloodshed, and that was, you know, the last thing he did.
But that
public.
Wasn't appreciated by the other members of the government. This was already after he'd realized his political career was probably over. Do you think that he felt that he had nothing more to lose?
Absolutely. He made a last attempt to persuade the student to leave a square, and it was the last attempt to avoid bloodshed.
And what was the reaction of the party leadership to his going and speaking to the students?
They were furious. I think that's one of the accusations that it was, you know, put forward.
And then came the suppression on June 4th, and China went into, as you say, pretty much a two-year period in which it all reforms were stopped. What happened to Zhang? Was he immediately put under arrest?
Zhao was basically lost his freedom as soon as, you know, he disappeared.
Zhao,
from
I
the
don't
public.
Know why I said Zhang. Yeah, lost his freedom immediately after.
Yes,
he was accused of being a conspirator of the counter-revolution. That sounds like the sort of thing that would have been said during the Maoist days.
He was actually surprised that some of the tactic, you know, used, you know, in Mao's years actually came back. Against him in the era of reform.
In fact, in the journal, he accuses the Communist Party of using tactics of the Cultural Revolution to oust him. At that point, all of those tactics had been disavowed by the Chinese government.
It shows, you know, how stubborn the system is, and at a time of a crisis, and the old habits comes back.
One of his biggest political rivals was Li Jianyan, who was economically as well as culturally conservative. Did Li end up assuming greater power once Zhao had been removed?
No. The answer is no, because Deng Xiaoping wanted to reform go forward, and he made sure the old guards retires, and he made sure, you know, in 1992, the new people that actually put in place comply to his wishes.
Now, Zhao describes meetings taking place among the different party members in their homes. Is that the way that the leaders actually made their major decisions? Were they more likely to do it on a social level rather than in the government offices?
I think having a Politburo meeting at home is Deng Xiaoping's personal habits, and it does not mean that every Chinese leader does that.
My guest is one of the editors of a new book called Prisoner of the State, The Secret Journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang. He's Baopu, B-A-O-P-U. The other editors and translators are Renee Chang and Addie Ignatius, and the book is called Prisoner of the State, The Secret Journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang. It's published by Simon & Schuster. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. There was a three-year investigation into Zhao's actions surrounding the Tiananmen Square massacre. So he wasn't dismissed immediately?
The reason that the investigation lasted, you know, for 3 years was a part of the pretense, you know, to keep him completely isolated, you know, from the society.
Did people notice that he had disappeared?
Yes, he was, you know, disappeared, and that was the fact.
So, was there any public reaction, or had the government clamped down so much that nobody could react?
People were silenced.
Mm-hmm. And so he was put under house arrest, and you say that that pretty much meant that his freedom of movement was limited, although he was allowed out once in a while. Did he believe that he was being made into a scapegoat, somebody the leadership could blame when everything went wrong?
It was expected after he parted with Deng Xiaoping. And the given the party history, and the party regularly cleans out people who have a different opinion, and it shows in their track record.
Well, he says in the journal that the priority of the party's leaders was not to address the demonstrations, but instead to settle an internal power struggle between conservatives and liberals inside the party. I suspect that this is the way it was in China and maybe in the Soviet Union as well throughout the long history of communism.
Yes, but the debate they have, it might be legitimate debate, because no one was sure, where the reform should go. But unfortunately, the system requires total consensus, and because of that, the legitimate debate has to take a form of the so-called power struggle. What you see is this undercurrent of so-called power struggle.
Wasn't it understandable that he would have been a liberal? He was brought in to enact land reform after all of the damage that was done by the Great Leap Forward.
Yes, he was a very experienced provincial leader and known for finding practical solutions. And that was a kind of skill that was required at the time.
And then later he became, along with Deng Xiaoping, a supporter of what they called fast reform. I never understood how the Chinese leadership was able to reconcile the introduction of what is, in effect, capitalist free market systems and still call itself a communist government.
Deng Xiaoping himself has known for having he regularly disregard any theory and dogma, and he is a practical leader, and because of his political backing and a lot of reform could actually put through without justify in theory, so that's the so-called reformers, and they did without a official name, to justify, their program.
Now, do you think if Zhao were alive today that he would be a member of the government, or would he still be considered too liberal?
I think he is a leader, a practical leader, and what he's good at is finding practical solutions. I don't think he would be considered with visionary and who's having this great vision and requires other people to pay for it.
So he really wasn't pushing for a parliamentary democracy?
After he's putting under house arrest, he described his thoughts on political reform has changed, and the results was that he think Western parliamentary democracy is a system that has vitality, and there is no system that's better.
Well, he'd been radicalized by his own experience. Perhaps, as you say, if he had stayed in government, he was more practical and more pragmatic, and he probably wouldn't have come to those conclusions.
Yes, I think that actually illustrates he's playing a different role.
Now, you said that the book has been available in Hong Kong. That means that I'm sure it's also been smuggled into the rest of China. Do we have any sense of the reaction to this book?
I think, you know, after the book, shortly after the book being released, and somebody decided to put it online for the mainland Chinese readers. And within, you know, a couple of days, you know, not only everybody in China knows the book, you know, has been published, but also, everybody knows that it's online.
And we can only guess at what kind of reaction we're going to have finally to this whole thing. Has there been any Chinese government reaction?
There were some attempt, you know, to criticize, you know, the Western media attention to the book, and there were criticism to Professor McFarquhar's forward. There were criticism to the English title, but there hasn't been a direct criticism towards the content of the book.
Bao Pu is a political commentator and veteran human rights activist, publisher and editor at New Century Press in Hong Kong, and publisher of the Chinese language version of this book that we are discussing, Prisoner of the State, the Secret Journal of Premier Zhao Ziyang. He is also the son of Bao Tong, the former top advisor to Zhao Ziyang, who was arrested after the Tiananmen Square massacre and sentenced to 7 years in prison. Your father was.
Yes.
This book is published in this country by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Bao Pu will be in conversation with Orville Schell and Winston Lord, the former ambassador to China, tonight at 6:30 at the Asia Society. That's at 725 Park Avenue. For more information on how to get tickets, visit our show page at wnyc.org. Robert Sebag was on Air New England Flight 248 when it crashed in 1979. Up next, he describes what happened that night 30 years ago and how the survivors of the crash have dealt with all the emotional fallout ever since. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.